Hey there, guys and gals, all you hip cats, cool kittens, my friends and foes. Welcome back to an episode of Tales from the Flip Side on the Diesel Punk Podcast. I am your host, the artist also known as Big Daddy Cool, the Bamboozlist, John Pica. You can call me Johnny. And on this episode, we are going to talk about some big news regarding Diesel Punk Television. And I'm also going to give you my thoughts and reviews on Alita, Battle Angel, and the Netflix original television show, The Umbrella Academy. But before we get to that, we need to acknowledge our sponsor, Magic Subscription Box. I'm a magician. I perform professionally all around the country, and I love Magic Subscription Box. They basically deliver a magic shop to your mailbox every month. It's awesome. It's like your birthday or Christmas every month, but it's magic. And it comes with instructions, with a link to video tutorials. It's worth between $60 to $80 in magic every month for only $25 plus $5 shipping and handling. Everything delivered to your door for $30. But here's the great thing. Use my promo code BECMAGIC and take 50% off your first month. That's right. Get your first Magic Subscription Box for $15. Go to magicsubscriptionbox.com, enter my promo code BDCMAGIC, and get your first box for 50% off. Also, want to remind you, if you're in the mood for something great to read, check out my book, Tales from the Flip Side, The Adventures of Big Daddy Cool and the Bombshell Kittens. It's time-traveling gangsters, super-powered showgirls, fighting vampire Nazis in an alternate reality, diesel punk 1940s Chicago. It's an autobiography. You can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Audible, iTunes, wherever books are sold. Check it out right now. All right, let's dive into this episode. So let's get to some news first. So the big news that dropped on Friday is that the Amazon hit series, The Man in the High Castle, is returning for season 4 that is scheduled to debut this fall, the fall of 2019. This is huge news because we knew at the end of season 3 there had to be a season 4. That isn't how the story ended. I guess it could have ended with Juliana blinking out of reality, traveling to another dimension, with us never knowing what really happens in the end, just assuming that she lives, you know, happily ever after, but we don't know. Season 4 is going to tie everything up and resolve all of the lingering plot lines, because they have said that season 4 will definitely be the final season. And I kind of like that. I'm not a big fan of these TV shows going on and on and on and on ad nauseum with no definitive ending. I like to know that there is a definitive ending coming. And, you know, season 3, the end of season 3, felt a lot like the end of Agent Carter season 2. It left us on a big cliffhanger. John Smith, Obergruppenführer, I'm going to get this right. Obergruppenführer, got it. John Smith has been elevated to basically second in the Reich. And Juliana Crane has discovered the secret of dimension traveling. And we've encountered the travelers in season 3. We found out that Himmler's secret plan was to travel to all of the different dimensions, all of the worlds, and conquer them one at a time in the name of the Reich. But there's a problem. And the problem is that two people cannot exist in the same world at the same time. The same person cannot exist in two worlds at the same time. So when they were sending over soldiers into some of the in their tests, they were being destroyed, like turned into globs of goo as they went over. And that's because their alternate reality doppelgangers are on the other side and they can't exist in the same space. Now, it seems like either Juliana Crane is an exception to this or she herself is traveling to all of the different worlds. And I say that because we learn in season three that all of the films that the Man in the High Castle has collected have one thing in common. They all have Juliana Crane in them. So she seems to be a central linchpin. Now, from the trailer that I saw for Man in the High Castle season four, it looks like, and I'm going to lay odds on this, that the way this ends is that John Smith and Juliana Crane end up together living happily ever after in contemporary United States. They somehow both end up in the current timeline where the Nazis lost, America won, and they jump forward, not just across dimensions, but forward in time to the present day. Because there are some shots of New York City that look like present day New York City in the trailer. That's my feeling. That's my bet. We'll see if I'm right this fall as Man in the High Castle returns to Amazon Prime the fall of 2019. But that's huge news for Dieselpunk TV fans and fans of Man in the High Castle to begin with. Now, you might be asking, Johnny, how is this Dieselpunk? Isn't it just alternate history? Bingo. Alternate history is a big part of the science fiction and fantasy element of Dieselpunk. In this case, Man in the High Castle meets all three criteria for it to be Dieselpunk. It has the visual aesthetics and the style of the era, of the Diesel era, the Jazz Age, what we call decadence. It has science fiction and fantasy in that you're dimension hopping, time traveling. That's definitely science fiction and fantasy. And according to Eric Fisk, he would go so far to say that it is the best science fiction television series since the reboot of Battlestar Galactica. I would say it's the best TV show, period, in the last 10 years. But that's just me. And then the third element to be punk is the punk, right? It's got to have that countercultural element. And in a recent episode, we kind of redefined what that means, and I believe that it's punk anytime you have a person or a group of people, characters, who are fighting against an authoritarian power, a tyranny of sorts. That can be cultural tyranny, that can be political tyranny, that can be religious tyranny. Anytime there is an anti-authoritarian battle, be it, you know, physical battle, mental battle, cyber battle, however that happens, you've got a group of characters that are anti-authoritarian, that are fighting against a tyrannical power. And we definitely have that in Man in the High Castle. The Nazis and the Japanese control the United States, and you've got bands of freedom fighters and rebels who are fighting against them in hopes to reclaim the United States for Americans. So that's good news. Really cool. Excited about Man in the High Castle season four. But if that weren't enough, 3 days ago, we got the news that Penny Dreadful is returning to Showtime this year. And it's a sequel to the original series set in 1930s Los Angeles. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Penny Dreadful, City of Angels, pure Dieselpunk horror. So in the original Penny Dreadful series, it was, you know, a Victorian setting. The Victorian characters of literature were, interacting, in some cases teaming up. Some were just kind of archetype characters, like Josh Hartnett's character, the werewolf. And Timothy Dalton's character, the adventurer, kind of the Quartermain type character. But then you had some legit characters right out of literature, like Dr. Jekyll, and you had Dr. Frankenstein and Frankenstein's monster, and the the Bride of Frankenstein, Lily, and Dorian Gray. So you had this mix-up, this mash-up of original characters and established characters from literature. Well, Penny Dreadful, City of Angels will be set nearly 40 years after the original series, and instead of Victorian London, it'll be Hollywood during the golden age of the 1930s. It's 1938 Los Angeles, a time and a place deeply infused with Mexican and American folklore and social tension. So what are some of the things that are going on? We've just come out of Prohibition. The war in Europe is raging. We've not entered it yet. There is all of this social tension. We see the Zoot Suit riots in L.A. And if I were a betting man, because the descriptions that we've gotten so far, it's a conflict between characters connected to the deity Santa Muerte and others allied with the devil. Penny Dreadful, City of Angels will explore a mix of the supernatural and the combustible reality of that period, creating new occult myths and moral dilemmas with its historical backdrop. And the story revolves around the Vega family. Detective Tiago Vega is embroiled in an epic story that reflects the rich history of Los Angeles, from the building of the city's first freeways and its deep traditions in Mexican-American folklore to the dangerous espionage actions of the Third Reich and the rise of radio evangelism. Before long, Tiago and his family are grappling with the powerful forces that threaten to tear them apart. And from what I've read, it sounds like this Vega family is split. You've got the detective on the police force, and I get a sense from what I've read that other members of the Vega family are actually part of the Los Angeles Mafia. And if I were a betting man, we're going to see a lot of tension for control over the Mafia among the different families, demons, and it mentions Mexican-American folklore. That means werewolves. You know, in Penny Dreadful, vampires were kind of the big thing, vampires and witches. In City of Angels, we're going to see werewolves. They are going to be the focus, because werewolf folklore in the Mexican and American Indian traditions is really, really rich. I'd love to see an interpretation of Quetzalcoatl, the dragon from Mexican folklore. We'll have to wait and see, but this is super exciting as well. So we've got Man in the High Castle Season 4, and then we have Penny Dreadful, City of Angels right behind it. And it's unknown if this is just a spiritual sequel to the original series or if it is, in fact, set in the same universe. I hope it is. I hope it is. And if it is in the same universe, Frankenstein's monster could be the connective tissue that ties both series together. If I remember correctly, at the end of the first Penny Dreadful series, he's seen on a steamer ship leaving Europe for who knows where. And then, of course, we've got the immortal Dorian Gray and Lily Frankenstein for the first season, and they would presumably still be alive as well in this time period. And can you imagine Dorian Gray in Los Angeles? And, of course, we would love to see Eva Green return, but you remember, her character died at the end of the series. So if she comes back, she's either an entirely new character, an ancestor of, or resurrected. Dun, dun, dun. Anyway, Penny Dreadful, City of Angels. And if you've never seen the original series, it is kind of like, held up by steampunks as, you know, this beautiful Victorian steampunk gothic horror show. Great, great show. Phenomenal, phenomenal. But now us diesel punks get our own Penny Dreadful in Penny Dreadful, City of Angels. Huge news, super excited. All right, so on the Diesel Punks board, a couple of weeks ago, I posted a question. Who are some Diesel Punk characters that appear in non-Diesel Punk properties, movies or TV shows primarily? And the first two that I listed off the top of my head were Ducky Dale, John Cryer's character from Pretty in Pink. You know, to my knowledge, to my mind, he was the original Diesel Punk. And, of course, Ferris Bueller from Ferris Bueller's Day Off. He was totally sporting the 1940s casual attire. And those movies are not Diesel Punk movies. They are contemporary, you know, coming of age movies. But you've got some Diesel Punk characters within those. And it started me thinking about others. And, I didn't come up with very many, but a few that I did come up with are in properties that have been out just recently. I just finished The Umbrella Academy on Netflix. This is one of the first non-Marvel Netflix original superhero series that they are doing. The Umbrella Academy is based on a Dark Horse comic series about a group of seven children who are born on the same day to women who were not pregnant until that day. So they woke up in the morning, normal as can be, sometime during the middle of the day, they suddenly became pregnant and came to full term within just a few moments and gave birth to these seven kids. All seven of them have extraordinary abilities. Some are hidden, some are wasted, some are squandered, but they're all extraordinary. The show involves time travel and trying to preserve the timeline. And one character, number five, he jumps around in time periods, and there's a reference to him having adventures in 1936. There's an unsolved crime from 1936 with his fingerprints on it. Now, we don't get into a whole lot of the time travel. However, in the cast of characters, there is a character, Sir Reginald Hargreaves. And Sir Reginald Hargreaves, he's kind of the Professor X of the Umbrella Academy. He adopts the children as his own. He raises them. He trains them. He sends them out on missions. And Dr. Hargreaves, or Sir Hargreaves, I think he's a doctor too, because there are some scenes that indicate that maybe he is. He builds a super advanced artificial intelligence, the character of Grace, their mother. And there's a monkey, a chimpanzee, who is fully sentient and capable of speech. We don't know if that's a inherited genetic thing or if Sir Reginald, did something to mutate him or to give him that ability. But he's kind of the Jarvis of the Umbrella Academy, or the Alfred. You know, he helps raise the children, teach the children, and monitor the children. And the show is a really slow burn. It was 10 episodes, and true to Netflix television fashion, it's a slow build. I was disappointed in one major aspect, and that's we never really got to see these now adult people using their powers as a team. We see them in one flashback in like episode 3 as children, using their powers to thwart a bank robbery, but we never see them at full power, at their full potential, fighting together as a team. I was really disappointed in that. I really was waiting for that moment. However, that aside, there's a lot of time travel. Okay, so that was my one quip. The other one is that time travel is used as a deus ex machina. Hey, we're in a jam. What do we do? Oh, we're just going to time travel back in time to before this point and stop it all from happening. Now that we know what happens, let's go back and stop it once and for all. That seemed like a little bit of a cop-out to me. And it ended with a cliffhanger with the seven kids all teleporting back into time. You just see them blink out of, the current timeline, and the series ends like that. But what brings the kids all together after they're adults, they've split up throughout the years, what brings them back together is the death of Sir Reginald Hargreaves. And we find out that, he was a hard taskmaster, distant, cold. We find out throughout the series why, but the children, the kids, now adults, do not regard him very highly. And I think by the end, they start to understand what's going on with him and their lives and really what he did for them. But Sir Reginald is one of those characters that is a true retro punk, diesel punk style, deco punk, whatever you want to call it, diesel, deco. He is the one character in the Umbrella Academy that is a diesel punk inside a property that's not diesel punk. He wears the swank 1920s, 30s, and 40s suits, long coats, the fedora. He doesn't wear glasses. He wears a monocle. He's got the handlebar mustache. He's just super cool. And of course, because he has the visual aesthetics of the era, and there's tons of science fiction and fantasy in this, but he's the one who is the architect, the builder, the maker. He creates the tech. He trains the kids. And he is, of course, training them to fight against the coming apocalypse. Although it's not an authoritarian entity, it is a world-ending event. So in that regards, there's a little bit of tyranny. And we find out that it's because of a person. But solid show, slow build, but has a great diesel punk character inside a non-diesel punk property, and it's a great example of that. Another great example of that is in Alita Battle Angel. Now, Alita Battle Angel is going to fall in the cyberpunk realm. Post-apocalyptic dystopian cyberpunk. And the visual aesthetics fit right along with Blade Runner. This movie could have happened along with Blade Runner. It could exist side by side with Ready Player One. You know, there's been some kind of apocalypse, and we know in Alita Battle Angel that it's what they call the fall. 300 years before the movie, all of the world's major cities were now in the sky. They were floating cities in the sky. It's where the rich and elite lived, and only the lowest of the low still lived on Earth. But in a war against the United Republic of Mars, all of the cities fall to the Earth. They crash, except for one, Zalem. And Zalem still floats high above the sky, above Iron City. And Iron City is, you know, it's a shambles in some places. It's got, you know, a lot of neon and high-tech displays in others, and a huge population of cyborgs in every walk of life, from full-on robotic bodies to maybe just one or two limbs. And their entire society revolves around this game called Motorball. And Alita is a cyborg that Dr. Dyson Ido recovers from the scrapyard. She's been discarded, tossed out in the trash from Zalem, the floating city. He finds her in the trash bin. He reconstructs her. He attaches her to a new body, brings her back online. And the story is about her discovering and becoming who she already is. She's a warrior of the United Republic of Mars. And she's at least 300 years old, total badass. She knows the fighting art of Panzerkunst, which was developed specifically for the berserker warriors of the URM, the URM. Are you with me? So this movie is kind of a mashup of Blade Runner, of, you know, Mad Max, Beyond Thunderdome, the Rollerball movie with LL Cool J, and you know, it's just this mashup of a lot of different tropes, a lot of different styles, and you know, it's based on a Japanese manga, but it's mostly cyberpunk. It's that cyberpunk environment. But there are some characters who are definitely diesel punk or steampunk style characters, and there's a lot to really love. There's a lot of things for people to love in this movie, especially if you're diesel punk. But the biggest one is Dr. Dyson Ido himself. He is a trench coat wearing, fedora wearing, high tech, low tech warrior hunter, who is basically, they're the heroes of Iron City, the bounty hunters who have now taken over the job of the police in protecting the city from criminals and villains. And he's very, very diesel punk. And his house where he lives is, you know, it's seen better days, but it's definitely got that Art Deco early Americana styling to it. And he's another great example of a diesel punk character in a non-diesel punk property. And look, there are problems with this movie. You know, I really kind of don't understand why they used some of the CGI where they did and when they did, especially on Alita, because Alita is played by an actress, Rosa Salazar. And there are times when it's obvious that she is right there, but then there are other times where it's obvious where they did motion capture over her physically being there. And they changed some of her facial structure. I just don't know why they would do that. When you, there are so many things that you could do with practical effects, why resort to the CGI? That bothers me as a creative person and as a fan. The other problem that I had was there was way too many coincidences. Like Jennifer Connelly plays Sharin, who is trying to get back to Zalem, the ex-wife of Dr. Ido. And there's a scene where Alita and Hugo are trying to escape one of the bounty hunters, Zerpan, and they retreat to this church. And somehow, some magical way, Sharin goes from the motorball stadium all the way over to the church to just happen to trip across Hugo and Alita. That bothered me. And there were a lot of coincidences in this movie, a lot of things that were not explained. You know, how did people know this or know that? Or like Hugo takes Alita to a crashed URM ship, telling her, hey, I think there's something beyond the Badlands that might help regain your memory. Well, why would he think that? Why would he take her there? What made him want to do that? Little things like that really bothered me. So other than that, though, it was an enjoyable movie. It's not, you know, it's not the best movie ever made, but there are a lot of things for retro punks to like. There's some steampunk, there's some diesel punk. It's definitely cyberpunk. Again, kind of picture this mashup of Mad Max, Blade Runner, and Rollerball. So, and maybe a little bit of Speed Racer. But really cool, worth watching. Go check it out. And let me know if you agree with the assessment that Dr. Ido is a diesel punk character. And while we're at it, Sir Reginald Hargreaves from the Umbrella Academy. You can shoot me a note at feedback@dieselpunkpodcast or directly to my email, bigdaddycool@bigdaddycoolshows.com. I would love to hear from you. And while you're dropping a note, go to iTunes, give us a 5-star review on the Diesel Punk Podcast, post a review, make it good, and that helps us get more listeners, move up higher in the rankings, and expose more people to the gospel of the diesel punk. Well, guys and gals, that is it for this week's show. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, my name is John Pica. If you didn't like it, my name is Chris Angel. And until the next time, make sure you tell 200-300 of your closest friends and family to come join the fun, to listen to the Diesel Punk Podcast, and we'll catch you on the flip side.